This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And as mentioned, our first story this hour is going to be looking at the duties of an MP and the expectations and limits of that role. So this is coming amid Bukit Aman's investigation into Segambut MP Hannah Yeo's tweet on child marriage. You might have seen this tweet. It actually went out back in March and it essentially asked what would happen to the previous government's agenda to end child marriage. And as context, it also came as past MP Datuk Siti Zailah Mohamed Yusof replaced Hannah as the Deputy Women, Family and Community Development Minister, and it clearly concerned YB Hannah Yeo since Datuk Siti Zailah has previously defended child marriage. So going back to Bukit Aman and the tweet, the Pakatan Harapan MP is going to be investigated under Section 505 of the Penal Code and Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act 1998. And unsurprisingly, this move has drawn flak. Satya Wangsa MP Nik Nazmi Nik Ahmad said that we've returned to the bad old days of BN where free speech is stifled and the opposition is intimidated. So we spoke with YB Hannah earlier today and we actually asked her what her understanding was on why she was being investigated.
So I received a call yesterday from Bukit Aman asking me to go in to record my statement concerning a tweet in March this year. That tweet, based on what the cop sent to me, is on the question that I have posed to the new Deputy Minister of the Women, Family and Community Development Ministry, right, on what's going to happen to the roadmap for us to curb child marriage in Malaysia.
And we went on to then ask her what's going to happen next in the investigation.
Okay, so they have requested for me to come in to record my statement and then they will tell me exactly which provision, under which law that they are looking into. But based on the reports by the police to Malaysia Kini yesterday, I understand they are looking at Penal Code and also the SKMM Act.
So that was Hannah Yeo, MP of Segambut. And this whole situation, I think, would boil down to a few main things. Beyond free speech, there's the issue of how MPs are supposed to check the government when parliamentary sittings are delayed. I mean, it is coming up soon, but in the meantime, and since, you know, for a few months now, with no official channel to go through, are MPs supposed to keep silent and wait? Lawyer Harshan Zamani, for instance, says that YB Hannah's tweet is consistent with the oath she took as an MP, and that is to discharge her duties to the best of her ability and to preserve, protect and defend the Constitution. So I think that there's also something else that's important to note here, and that is this issue of what happens to proposals and plans as we move from administration to administration. Now, of course, a five-year plan, you would assume that you have one term to finish that. We know that that's not what happened with the Pakatan Harapan government and with the introduction of the PN government instead. But there are also other things. I mean, if you look at some issues, they would appear, at least, to be bipartisan. It should appear that it's for the good of the rakyat, ergo, if it is submitted, if it is approved, within one administration, you would hope that the next government would carry it through. But then other things enter this picture, right? Like politicking, whether or not it suits their ideological purposes, whether or not that's how they want to allocate funding. So these are just some of the issues that we're about to explore because we're going to be speaking with James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions, about these very things. But in the meantime, would love to hear your thoughts on the situation as a whole. You know, how do you feel about YB Hannah Yeo being called to Bukit Aman for the investigation? And also about, you know, how these sorts of plans and proposals can change at just, I guess, the drop of a hat. You can let us know. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be right back on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:13 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're talking today about the duties of an MP and the expectations and limits of that role, especially when it comes to holding the government accountable and also in terms of ensuring some sense of continuity to all these 5-year, 10-year, 20-year plans that we always hear about. If you would like to weigh in on your thoughts surrounding this, this is a point of discussion, of course, because what Sir Gambut MP Hannah Yeo has been called to Bukit Aman over a tweet about child marriage. If you'd like to weigh in, that number to call is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now going to be crossing over to James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions. James, thank you for joining us.
Hi, good evening.
So let's start by talking about this, these policies, right? Because as mentioned earlier, what we see more often than not, and the fear here, I guess, that provoked the tweet in the first place, was that proposals that are put forth by one administration don't carry through to another. So when we do see a change in ministers, do policies from the former usually stay on?
Most of the time, policies do stay on. I mean, most of the policies do stay on because it is simply not feasible to cancel most of the policies that were implemented by the past administration and to restart again. And once most politicians would realize once they join government is that most things actually have a way of running already. And most of the time, you would only change the ones where you have an ideological or a political difference that is strong enough, which is in the case of YB Hannah Yeo's case, whereby she anticipated something may be different because of the ideological differences. But generally, most politicians actually enter into government, and there's a steep learning curve for them to learn how things are done rather than these politicians going in and instructing the existing civil servants how to work. And therefore, I think it is only under those very exceptional circumstances that they would try to reinvent the wheel. But also the other thing that most politicians would probably care for are like the leadership changes. So these are like your GLC chairman or like your agencies or like the special officers. Those are the ones that they definitely overhaul if they can.
So politically then, what would be the pros and cons for choosing to continue a policy or otherwise?
The good thing is that if you do continue a lot of the policies of the past, and a lot of opposition leaders, once they enter into government, they realize that, hey, a lot of policies by the previous administration are actually not bad. And therefore, even if they don't do anything about it but continue, they would receive a lot of indirect benefit from a lot of these good policies. So, for example, a lot of the GDP numbers that are good or the debt numbers that are going down are typically not a direct causation by this new administration. They're simply really just continuing a lot of legacy policies that contributed to these good numbers. So they would definitely benefit if they do continue some of these policies. Now, the bad thing, however, is that if a lot of those policies that people remember the past administration for are not aligned with the ideologies of the new government's voters, that would present a potential for a revolt among the voting base of that new government. So issues, for example, like if PAS goes up, they would definitely not reintroduce ICERT, for example. They would not want to ratify that because that would cause irate among their voting base. Or like the recognition of UEC. So things that are normally related to race and religion, of course, are what voters remember policies for. And therefore, they would definitely have to reinvent the wheel if it's not aligned with what they believe in.
So might we then, I mean, like you said, right, if you see a good policy, you're going to want to take advantage of it. So do we also sometimes see a simple repackaging of a policy where it's the same thing, but maybe put under a different campaign? And could you think of an example where this has happened?
Yeah. So I think the most noticeable example that's recent enough for us to remember is probably the BRIM policy, the direct cash transfer to voters below certain threshold of income. Pakatan, what they did when they went up is to repackage it to Bantuan Sara Hidup, which is just a different name, really, and maybe some differences in how much they give out. The very important thing to note here is that I think they realized that economically, direct cash transfer did make sense. So the only problem with BRIM, for example, is that it was introduced during a very unpopular time, whereby it is really perceived as vote buying rather than actual direct cash transfer with sound economic fundamentals. And therefore, that branding or that PR exercise in making a BRIM BSH instead would significantly help. But that would be a very clear example of repackaging something that worked in the past. Some of the other things that I could think of would be not really repackaging, but it's sort of like renegotiating a lot of the mega projects of the past. They also realized maybe there are some good economics that could flow from that, from implementing mega projects, but they repackage it to be one that is free from wastage and leakages and would still continue them as they are, really.
Now, we're talking about this because this is a former deputy minister worried about the implementation of a plan by a current deputy minister. How much sway do former ministers have over a sitting minister's decisions and policies, if at all?
I think the reason why probably YB Hannah used these comments were quite stinging and it caught attention was because it was very effective. I think it rarely ever happens in our country because we haven't had that many changes of government before. And the good thing about changing government to different coalitions or parties is that those people who have been in government before, they are more competitive and they have a higher sense of ownership of their work. And therefore, YB Hannah, you definitely have a higher sense of ownership of her work. And she felt strongly and well, probably worried about what may happen to some of the good things that she has done when she was a deputy minister. And therefore, the sway by them is definitely significantly stronger than any probably keyboard warrior or any outsider commenting or criticizing the government. Because I think what Pakatan has also realized was that in the past, when they weren't in government, they really don't know the ins and outs and the mechanisms of what make government work and fail. Now that they were in it before and they have such a strong sense of ownership, once they go out, they definitely know what they're talking about. Right, so that really is a healthy way of sort of like tasting the fruits of democracy after changing government a few times.
Right, and does this change at all if you don't come into power with a manifesto?
I mean, it's really good if you go into any government without manifesto because nobody can hold you to account, really. What we also learned through Pakatan's government was that you really don't want a manifesto that's really too long because people keep asking about what about this and what about that, right? But the slightly bad thing about coming into government without a manifesto is that it sometimes is a bit like a blank check. So it allows the voters to just say, to sort of like just criticize the administration for things that they probably didn't promise in the first place, but they believe is within the same ideological spectrum as what the government should believe in. So, for example, if PAS never had any manifesto going into government, the voters would still expect things like banning alcohol, banning, let's say, karaoke places or things like that, or anything that's related to Islamic institution or like child marriages. Things like that would be within their area of expectation. So sometimes it may work against the government without a manifesto.
You mentioned right at the top of our conversation civil servants and the fact that most ministers don't come in immediately wanting to tell civil servants how to do their job. So when it comes to enforcing or ensuring some measure of continuity with policies, what is the role that civil servants play in this?
I think most of the civil servants, especially the top-line civil servants, they really are intent on wanting things to continue their way. I think the biggest resistance from civil servants is not because they are so beholden to the past administration politically, it's normally because they have a habit of doing things a certain way. And the bad thing about our country is that because it's been under the same administration for a long time, they're used to certain ways of doing things. And therefore, when a new government comes in, they're very uncomfortable and they would want to retain old habits, right? And therefore, they want to continue policies of the past. And it is not really because they have any special attachment to UMNO and BN politically. So they do have a really strong role because their main intention is always to continue things as it is. And therefore, most of the time, the challenge is how do I get them to change? But we cannot expect any disruption to the civil service to come in without any form of resistance from them. So that's my view on that.
And I guess this sounds like a simplistic question maybe, but should some issues just be nonpartisan? I mean, can you think of a time when that has actually been achieved?
I think there are some issues that can be naturally nonpartisan, whereby there is just very few political angles that you can go about. So, for example, things like technology, innovation, or like environment, and you want to imagine health as well sometimes that are less partisan on the mainstream media, right? So most of the policies that you hope that they introduce are non-partisan in nature. But the most recent one is probably how we have dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic. I think that is a display that both sides really want the same thing. It's just that and a lot of the difference in opinion are not necessarily partisan in nature. So that's something that is good. But the question that we could explore is that are there some things that are they ought to be non-partisan but are currently highly partisan, right? So I could think of two or three things. So one is that I think party hopping can actually, or a party hopping law can actually be something that's non-partisan. Because actually, since 1978, both sides, even BN or the opposition, has talked about anti-defection laws of this nature. It's just that it hasn't really snowballed into something that both parties can agree with at the same time, right? So, and issues like parliamentary reform or like giving opposition more budget should be something that's nonpartisan. The reason for that is because now both sides have tasted how difficult it is to be the opposition. You want to make sure that you buy yourself a bit of a safety net so that when you lose power, at least you don't lose out so much of the resources near to zero sometimes. So those are the things that I believe should have been nonpartisan and can really be done.
James, in closing, just one last question. How important is continuity when it comes to these plans? Because I think that we do see a lot of 5-year, 10-year plans being put out. And of course, if you want to affect change, you have to think on those sorts of timelines. But on the flip side, you see potential moments like this happening where it passes on, you know, beyond your administration.
I think most of the time, if a country wants to progress well, there must be some level of stability. Because a lot of policies, especially in our country, whereby a lot of the policies require some fundamental or structural revamp. We don't want it to be subjected to the political vagaries of all of these politicians. And most of the time, the change in government is not driven by how deep their convictions are on certain policies and really just to acquire power and money, right? So, of course, continuity in that respect is significantly important to make sure that it is, to a certain extent, protected from some of the political instincts of these irresponsible politicians. But really, there is nothing really to guarantee continuity but institutional reform. It's the most mundane, the unsexiest thing that you can hear. But institutional reform is what can guarantee good policies stay on. And that means strengthening the independence of civil servants, judiciary, parliament, and so on. That's the best way forward that I could think of.
James, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
That was James Chai, Head of Commercial and Research at Invoke Solutions, talking today about what happens to to plans and proposals when we see a change in government, and also the importance of having some non-partisan motions. And we're talking about this, of course, because we've seen today Segambut MP Hannah Yeo being called, being investigated really by Bukit Aman over a tweet on child marriage from back in March. And so that raises a couple of different questions that we'd love to hear your input on. So firstly, what are your thoughts on this? But also, what role do you think an MP plays in terms of holding a government accountable? And how important is continuity when it comes to having these sorts of plans and enacting them properly? You can let us know by calling 7733 2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be back after the 6:30 news. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.